The halacha says, Tav Kuf Nun Hei, 555, the halacha says that tonight, when we go to sleep, we are supposed to lie on the floor, Shulchan Aruch says so, and then he adds in the detail that some have a custom to put a rock, a stone, next to their head. Rama adds on, he says some people have the minute to put the stone next to their head, in remembrance of Yaakov Avinu, the Yaakov Avinu, when he went to sleep that time, it was Tisha B'av night according to the Medrash, he was talking about the Beis Medrash at the time, all in Parsha V'yetzei, and he also, because of the rocks combined next to him, we have a remembrance of those rocks, that's what it says. In the 1500s, there was an incredible concept happening in Judaism. There was a world without cell phones, world without any phones, world without mail service pretty much, and the Shulchan Aruch, he was living in Tzfas, the base of Cairo, and the Ramah was living in Krakow, and they simultaneously came up with an idea to organize in a concise manner the basic laws of Judaism. Shulchan Aruch. And what happened was they were separately working on it, unbeknownst to each other, and Rabbi Yosef Karo finished first, and then he sent it out. It was a massive undertaking, and it was an unbelievable success. And when it went around to the whole world, Rama got a copy, and he realized there would be no point in me writing over the Shulchan Aruch as well, because pick a number, 80% of the concept and content and topics are the same thing. Why would I write it over? And in a major act of humility, instead of saying, well, I also did it, what he did was he modified his entire version, and he just put notes, what's called the map of the notes, onto the Shulchan Aruch. And that's how it works. He did a major move. You can find the original Ksav Yad, it'll be worth $1 billion. And he gave it all up in the honor of humility, just to say, I'm writing notes on him. What was the point of writing notes? Because the Shulchan Aruch was based on, we'll say simply, the Svarisha customs. It was based on a certain way of judging it. And in Ashkenaz, they had different customs. So really what the Ramo was doing was, he was saying, even though the Shulchan Aruch says X, us in Minig Ashkenaz, we do Y. So 90% of the, more than 90% of the Ramah on his notes is just saying when the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, Ashkenaz and Sephardi disagree with each other, well, this is a different custom. Over here, it's a very strange thing, extremely strange. The Shulchan Aruch says, halacha l'maaseh, people are noyig to put a rock next to their head when they go to sleep. The Ramah says, people are noyig to put a rock next to their head. But he didn't add anything to it. Then he gave another reason. Oh, by the way, you want to know why people do it? To remember Yaakov Avinu. Is the Ramah coming to give us reasons on why things are different? That's not what the system was for. The reason why the Ramah wrote what he wrote was to tell you when we differ, when we're different in halacha, with the Svarisha custom, or different minhagim, a different halacha, then I want to tell you what we do differently. But here they're doing the exact same thing. The Shulchan Aruch says put the rock down, and the Ramah says put the rock down. Well, he's saying, by the way, think of something else. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't even say what he's supposed to think about. So who said the Ramah is even disagreeing with Shulchan Aruch? Maybe the Shulchan Aruch meant the same thing. So clearly on that basis, we're going to go tonight on a possibility to say what the Shulchan Aruch might have been thinking on why the custom began to put a rock, a different custom. And the Ramah was saying that, no, that custom is not what it's about. There's a whole different reason. And the different reason might have some practical differences. So, that's just the introduction. If you go over to someone, you ask them, why was the Beis Midrash destroyed? So, depends on what the guy answers. Probably, Yiddish people answer questions with questions. So they'll probably say, which Beis HaMikdash? Is it the first or the second? Okay. Then you'll say, let's say the second one. So everyone knows Sinas Chinam, but if you go to the Gemara on Shabbos, the Gemara gives about 10 other answers. They weren't knowing Kovid Zebezeh, they didn't treat the Tamid Acham well, they were Makbid on Din, they didn't do Mishlim Mishur Sadin. There are really a lot of reasons on why, potentially, Beis HaMikdash would have been destroyed. Sinas Chinam is a big one, obviously. Kamtzer Bar Kamtzer, we spoke about 2 years ago, which that's a story by itself, doesn't seem to be Sinas Chinam necessarily. So even though you now know, potentially, that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam is one of many reasons. I want to go back further. Not what was the transgression that created the ability for the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. But there's a fundamental flaw in the physical Beis HaMikdash. That means the construction of the Beis HaMikdash was flawed. That it could have been destroyed. It could have been built in a certain way that no matter how many transgressions Klal Yisrael did, it wouldn't have been destroyed. What does that mean? It couldn't have been destroyed? Yes, there's a possibility. Aruch Chaim HaKadosh in this week's Parsha, based on Arizal, but many of you probably know this already. The idea was, at a certain point during the desert, which we'll discuss tonight, Moshe Rabbeinu was told that he is not going to take the Yidden into Eretz Yisrael. And by him not taking the Yidden into Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua is going to take them in, he's going to remain on the other side, and he's going to be buried on the other side. He won't go in as a live person, and he won't go in as a dead person. He's going to remain on that side. And the Arizal said, we have certain midas and characteristics in Judaism, and Moshe Rabbeinu represents the midah of Netzach, the seventh of the great midas. Netzach means eternal. And the Arizal says that because he had this within him, this concept called eternity, that means if Moshe Rabbeinu would have crossed over into Eretz Yisrael, and he would have built the Beis HaMikdash, that building could not ever be destroyed. Because everything Moshe touched was eternal. as just for a couple of examples, we left Egypt because Moshe Rabbeinu was a major part of that story. Moshe Rabbeinu was the goyel of the Jews leaving Egypt. The Torah tells us right when the Jews left Egypt, you are never to return to Egypt again. We don't have to go to other places, other goddesses. We're allowed to go live in Babel. It wouldn't be a wise idea in today's world. But you technically move to Iran if you want. There are Jews living in Iran. But it came when it comes to the concept of Moshe Rabbeinu, everything he did is eternal. As soon as the Jews walk out of Egypt with Moshe Rabbeinu, that means they walk out, they don't go back in another. More than that, Moshe Rabbeinu brought down a Torah. He's the only one in the history of the world, the Kedushin thing. He brought down the Torah to the world. You know what that meant? From now on, the Torah is part of this world. Torah lo b'shamayimi. The Torah does not exist in heaven. That means, which has certain gemaras, where the gemaras has a machlokes, a conversation between angels and HaKadosh Baruch Hu on what the law should be. Who cares? We don't have to listen to what the law should be by Shemayim. We go both of this world. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu brings it down here. That means once the Torah is in this world, Moshe Rabbeinu is involved, always in this world. More so, Moshe Rabbeinu, until the Torah was given, there was no such thing as Klal Yisrael. It's a very controversial topic. Avraham Avinu was not a Yid. Yitzchak was not a Yid. There's no such thing as being a Yid. It didn't exist until Klal Yisrael received the Torah. So, but Moshe Rabbeinu was involved with Klal Yisrael receiving the Torah. You know what that means? That means once a Jew, always a Jew. You can't convert. You could try. You can go through a baptism, God forbid, but it doesn't make a difference. Not going to work. In the old days, prior to Moshe Rabbeinu bringing down the Torah, the Jews in Mitzrayim, some of them, four-fifths, whatever number you're going to go with, became totally Egyptians. They stayed there. They never got out. They were considered Egyptians. At that point in history, there was something called conversion out of the religion of Judaism. But once Moshe Rabbeinu gets involved, there's no such thing as conversion at all. The Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who created the Mishkan. The Mishkan was never conquered by non-Jews. The Babylonians didn't do it. The Nebuchadnezzar, nobody. Because Moshe Rabbeinu created the Mishkan. That means since he touched it, it's around forever. The Raiders of the Lost Ark. The Ark, Moshe Rabbeinu created the Urim. The Urim still exists. Anything Moshe Rabbeinu touched, because he was the Midah of what's called Netzach, was untouchable by human hands. It cannot be destroyed. They still exist. Somewhere in this world, there is an Urim. Somewhere in this world is the Mishkan. The Mishkan somewhere. I don't know where it is myself. But you can go on a scavenger hunt, get a tour bus, and get money for it. But the idea is that it has to exist. And the Arizal said, based on this similar concept, that Moshe Rabbeinu was the concept of eternity, the concept of Netzach, the concept of everything always existing forever once Moshe Rabbeinu is involved, that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have built a Beis HaMikdash, you know what that would mean? Forever it's involved. It would never have been touched. The Gemara, Medrash, in Kedushin Lamed Aleph on the base, has a fascinating Medrash. The Medrash says that we, in Perek Ayin Tes in Tehillim, we say Mizmer, we say a song when the Goyim came into the Heichal and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Medrash asks, is that a Mizmar? That's a Kinabi boy. It's Kinnis. You don't say Mizmar. And the answer the Medrash gives is no, it's very simple. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have been able, whatever the words mean, been able to destroy the physical Beis HaMikdash, he would have had to take his anger out on the Klai Yisrael itself. So because he was able to, again, all euphemisms in American society, get his anger out on the bricks and on the rocks, because he was able to do that, Klai Yisrael still survives. So when we discuss the destruction of the physical Beis HaMikdash, on some level we're very happy people, because the physical destruction of the Beis HaMikdash occurred, but on the good side of it, Klai Yisrael still exists. Had Moshe Rabbeinu walked in and built that Beis HaMikdash and been involved with that Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have been incapable, again, whatever it means on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's level, would have gone with the laws of society that Moshe Rabbeinu represents Netzach. The Beis HaMikdash would not have been capable of being destroyed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger, Kaviyachu, who says such words, would have been directed fully 100% on Klai Yisrael. There's all the Akdama to what we're talking about. Haven't started anything yet. So what we have here is that Moshe Rabbeinu represents the concept called Netzach. He represents the concept called eternity. And because he represents the concept of eternity, when he did not go into Eretz Yisrael, it was one of the greatest events of all time. One of the greatest events, because it helped us on some level in that way. So now we have to go back. If you want to know what was the root of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Sinas Chinim is a good one. Yeah, Gemara says so. Kamsa by Kamsa. Long story we spoke about 2 years ago. Yeah, it's a good one also. You can go through a lot of different Gemaras, and the Gemaras will describe different transgressions, different Averis, different sins that the Yiddish people did in the time of close to the end of the second Beis HaMikdash that would have caused the destruction. But all of that destruction can only occur if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't enter Eretz Yisrael. If Moshe wouldn't enter Eretz Yisrael, all of these discussions wouldn't have happened. Yes, the Yidden wouldn't be doing Averis, but the Beis HaMikdash would have stayed alive. So when you talk about the root of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, you have to, in my opinion, if you want to go peel back the layers, pass Sinas Chinam, pass Kamsa by Kamsa, pass being dumb l'chaberish, but not l'dat l'kavschus, pass not being l'shlimishar z'din. What are we going further back in time? When Moshe Rabbeinu did, I don't want to use such words, Moshe Rabbeinu was punished, a better word, when Moshe Rabbeinu was punished for doing something, and because he was punished, he was unable to enter Eretz Yisrael. That created the ability for the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed. Because had Moshe been allowed to enter Yisrael, had he not done something, we'll discuss, something to discuss not entering Eretz Yisrael, would have been a whole different universe. We would have been celebrating, observing Tisha B'Av in some, I don't know, it's an alternate universe, alternative situation, how it works. The way we have it today, Moshe Rabbeinu did something, he was punished, he didn't enter Eretz Yisrael, because he didn't enter Eretz Yisrael, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, we mourn the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, at the same time, we wink, wink, nod, nod, we're excited that we're still around, able to mourn it, because otherwise, we wouldn't be around, and the building would be around, we wouldn't be mourning it either. So let's go back to what we can say was the act, or non-act, that Moshe Rabbeinu did, that through that action created that the Beis Hamikdash now was flawed structurally. Like they had in Manhattan last week, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, that the building is coming down in Manhattan, right? The building's coming down. That means there's a problem structurally, there's a flaw. Without that structural flaw, the Beis Hamikdash could not be destroyed. Of course, but that's not a physical thing, it's a spiritual thing. Moshe Rabbeinu was involved with some story, that because of that story that he was involved with, there now is a structural flaw in the Beis Hamikdash that it could be destroyed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachol, will get upset with the Klal Yisrael. So what is that structural flaw? So, the easy explanation, this is layers and layers, we don't have enough time, but the easy explanation is, during the Parshas Kukas, after Miriam Hanaviyah passed away, the well stopped, Miriam Hanaviyah was the source for the well to be using, Moshe Rabbeinu created that Mun, created in Klal Yisrael, Aaron HaKohen created the clouds of glory, and Miriam created the well. When Aaron HaKohen passes away, the clouds of glory went away for a short time. And Amalek right away attacked. They were like the ultimate dome. What do you call it? A super dome. I forgot the name of that thing. Iron Dome. The ultimate Iron Dome was the clouds of glory. Ananiah covered. When Aaron HaKohen passed away, he was the reason for it. It disappeared for a short time. When Moshe Rabbeinu died, the Mun stopped falling. When Miriam Hanaviyah died, the well stopped producing well because she was the cause of the well to be produced. So what happened? We know the well stopped. And that was a problem. Klal Yisrael, understandably, went and complained. Where's the water? We need water. And then in that next conversation, what occurred? At some point in time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu then said to Moshe Rabbeinu, by the way, since you didn't sanctify my name, you weren't Mekadosh Shem Shemayim, you cannot enter Eretz Yisrael. These are the Pesukim reads. There are Pesukim that quote other situations in the desert for a different Tisha B'Av night. Hopefully, there'll never be Tisha B'Av again. But for the simple way to read it, you ask the Tinnik of Beirav, why was Moshe Rabbeinu not able to enter Eretz Yisrael? The answer is he did something wrong with the Beresh of Miriam, something wrong with the rock. What did he do wrong with the rock? The Rishonim have endless interpretations. The Rambam, the Ramban, Eben Ezra, Rabbeinu Chananel, Rashi, it's you literally could spend years just discussing each one's interpretation of what Moshe Rabbeinu might have done, I hate using the word Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong, what Moshe Rabbeinu got punished for, what exactly he was being punished for, to what he did wrong. And each one has questions on the other ones. But we're going to go through Rashi. Rabban Shal Yisrael. Rashi has a very interesting sort of events that occurs. Rashi says this openly in Parshas Kukas. You probably have to go inside, if we don't have it in front of me, to read the Rashi live, read it word for word, just to see how Rashi interprets the events that occurred. So the well went dry. The well went dry, that's fine. The well can go dry. And Am Yisrael came and told Moshe Rabbeinu, what are we going to do here? Moshe Rabbeinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take the stick and head toward the well. So he was ready. Now, by the way, historically speaking, 40 years earlier, when the well was opened the first time, when Miriam was still young, the well was opened by Moshe Rabbeinu taking the stick and hitting the rock. Nobody denies that. That's not Pasuk in Bashalach. Moshe Rabbeinu, round one, we'll call it, hit the rock, and the rock produced water. 40 years later, when Miriam passes away, that was right when the Jews left Egypt, in Pasuk Bashalach. Now, 40 years later, Miriam now passes away, the well is shut off, and Moshe Rabbeinu is told, take a stick and go to the rock. But Moshe Rabbeinu understood from at this point in the conversation that I'm taking a stick. That means possibly follow the situation that it should be last time. The same way last time I hit the stick, I hit the rock and the rock produced water. So this time I hit the rock and produced water. But Rashi says that's not what was supposed to happen. Even though he was told, take the stick. Rashi says that what happened was he was supposed to speak to the rock. Talk to the rock. By talking to the rock will produce water. That's what you're supposed to do. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu, what happened? So he says, Moshe Rabbeinu came over, and Moshe Rabbeinu was somewhat aware of this. Amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu did not, again, I don't want the word mistake. Moshe Rabbeinu was following the system, and he went over to a rock, and he started talking to the rock. The problem was, Rashi's saying this openly, that when Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to the rock, it wasn't the correct rock. It was the wrong one. And Klal Yisrael turns to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, what do you mean? What's the difference what rock it is? Figure it out. And Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to the rock, but because it's the wrong one, it's not producing water. So what Moshe Rabbeinu do now? Shmoshe Ben Gadol Rashi takes out the stick he has in his hand and decided, even though I thought I'm supposed to talk to the rock, which wasn't written really so much, it wasn't the Bat Malasela, but bring the stick, talk to the rock. Okay, I try talking to the rock, let me try hitting it. And what happens is Rashi says a miracle, that Moshe Benu not so clearly noticed it. The real rock now switched locations from this mistaken rock, unbelievable, some type of oddball miracle, rocks are moving, and now there's the correct rock is in front of Moshe Benu, and he hits it. But it doesn't work. Comes out teepin, a dribble comes out, a little bit. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was not supposed to hit the rock. He was supposed to talk to the rock. So he made the first reality talking to the wrong rock, and then he hit the correct rock, but he did both times wrong. Because when you're talking to the wrong rock, it's the wrong rock. When you hit the right rock, you weren't supposed to hit it. And Moshe Rabbeinu hits it a second time. And the second time, the water comes forth. This is Rashi's version of events. He spoke to the wrong one, hit the right one once, hit the right one a second time. And that was the mistake. Hitting it maybe the second time was the mistake, according to some of the read Rashi. Some say the first time, but this is the story of events. Ramban has a kasha. Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock instead of talking to the rock. And the Chumash says that because Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock, didn't talk to the rock, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, you know what? You did not sanctify my name. You were not Mekadosh Shem Shemayim, you were Mechalel Shem Shemayim. The Ramban has a great question. Ramban says, is there a difference between hitting a rock and talking to a rock? Is one actually a greater miracle? Last time I was here as a public service announcement, a few people asked me where they could find when I speak about, when I give shiurim. So I'm not on Torah any time. I said yet. I don't actually yet. Not on Torah time yet. I have my own website. A student of mine runs the website. It's rabbihubner.com. And at rabbihubner.com, there's a few people who come to the share every week. And again, there's a few hundred shiurim there. And one of the guys who runs the share, he's probably watching it right now. I'm giving him a shout out to Michael. He's an attorney, and he has an issue. He hates when I use the word, yeshiva gai shprach, when I say something is very unique. Every time, every once in a while I say it, I try not to say it in Tuesday night class. Every once in a while I say it, he gets very upset. There's no such thing as very unique. Unique implies very automatically. That means once you're unique at a certain level, you can't be more unique. Unique itself is something. Years ago, I have a couple friends watching, we used to be in the Irvington in Lakewood, it's the dormitory in Lakewood Yeshiva, and a bunch of guys who are not married and sitting around with very little time on their hands, I'll say, for learning that much. And what we do is we sit around and we discuss philosophical questions that could really cure the world from all its problems. All fundamental philosophical points. For example, could the Vilna Gaon have created an atomic bomb in the 1700s? If you were given one yomtiv to have, only one yomtiv the whole year, which yomtiv are you going to choose to do the most in your life? All types of interesting things. One of the questions I'm going to ask you now, you have to think of yourself. There's no such thing as very unique. Okay, maybe he's right, Michael, maybe he's wrong. Let me ask you something else. Is there something called a greater miracle? Is there something called a greater miracle? Well, once you're a miracle, all miracles equal. Does HaKadosh Baruch Hu need more? Let's give an example. A plane, God forbid, crashes. One guy is saved. A real plane crash, one guy is saved. Tremendous miracle. Is it more of a miracle if the plane crashes and all 50 are saved? Is that more of a miracle? Okay, that's not the perfect example because it's different people, maybe different miracles. Let's go with a different guy. If a guy falls off a building at 35 stories and he survives, unbelievable. Let's say a guy falls off the building, the same guy, but not 35 stories, 45 stories. Is 45 stories a greater miracle than 35 stories? Or once you have the concept of it's called a miracle. Philosophically, you have to go back to the Irv and have this conversation. Is there something called a greater miracle? Or a miracle is a miracle, it's all matter. The Ramban over here, I asked on Rashi, what are you talking about? Speaking to a rock and hitting a rock, do rocks normally produce a well of water that could exist and feed an entire Klai Yisrael? Now there is a kasha. The kasha is that the Mishnah in Masechta Avos discusses certain things that were created before mankind existed, including the Be'er Shel Miriam, which might imply that certain miracles needed HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do a greater miracle. The Yam Suf, when it split, needed a special Tanai to return to its water. So, in the conversation that was discussed, is that a greater miracle or that's something else? In the world of creation, before creation, certain things had to be created. So it's not really the miracle of it, it's the creation of it. But we're asking a very fundamental question. Is there something called a greater miracle? Is there something called very unique? The Ramban asks on Rashi, is there something called greater miracle? And therefore the Ramban disagrees with Rashi. He says Rashi's interpretation of Moshe Rabbeinu hitting the rock, being the mistake that then held back him going to that soul, which then created the basement, which could be destroyed, not true. And the Ramban has his approach. And as I said before, Ben Chanal has approached, Ibn Ezra has approached, the Rambam has approached. What Moshe might have done to be punished by not entering Eretz Yisrael, which we are existing today, because Moshe did not enter Eretz Yisrael means that the Beis HaMikdash was flawed structurally. Because it was flawed structurally, the Beis HaMikdash disappears. We're still here. But here we're going to go back to Rashi's interpretation. We don't know if there's something called a greater miracle. But Rashi clearly is understanding that there is a greater miracle. Rashi learns that the interpretation of Moshe Rabbeinu hitting the rock as opposed to talking to the rock is what caused the issue, and that was the problem. He was supposed to sanctify Hashem's name, but since you didn't sanctify Hashem's name by talking, the people would have understood that talking to the rock is more impressive. People would have said talking to the rock is such an impressive thing, they would have been more awed, and you hit the rock, it's not good enough. Okay, I like that. It's Rashi. In the story of Moshe Rabbeinu talking to rock and hitting a rock, was that the greatest miracle? Was the greatest miracle possible in this story, talking to the rock? Or maybe we could say, when we go through the fundamentals of the story, we potentially can come up with what we call a greater miracle as agreeing that there are miracles that are greater. So I want to tell you an halacha. The halacha is that when someone loses an object, Bab Metzia has laws of how you have to announce it, what the guy has to prove that it's his. The guy has to give a simon and a sign. It's called returning out of that. Shavas Aveda. You don't just, the guy comes out to you, you found a suitcase worth of money, the guy says it's mine. Okay, everyone says that. Go prove it. Give me a sign that makes it yours. You know who doesn't have to give a sign? Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham has something called Tfiyas Eina. Talmud Chacham has something called that they value everything they have. Their eyesight is bionic eyes. They're able to understand things just by looking at them on a different level. And when a Talmud Chacham goes over and said, that's mine, I don't need a simon. I know my object. We believe him right away. Because the Talmud Chacham can see things that average people don't see. They have a special way of seeing things. Okay, this is my question I'm asking everyone. Originally, when I told Dr. Mandel the name of the class I was planning on giving, he had veto rights, and he vetoed my original rights. I'm not sure if you remember. The original name of this class tonight was going to be the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I didn't put it on the list, but now that I'm up here and Dr. Mandel can't stop me, I'm going to tell you that was the original name of this class. The original class was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Rashi says that the rock that we're discussing here rolled.
Sound is terrible.
And hit himself among all the other rocks. I don't know how rocks move. I don't know if rocks are he's or she's.
Well, you have to close the door.
The rock rolled and disappeared among the other rocks. It rolled. How is it possible that Moshe Rabbeinu did not recognize what rock it was? Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 years. If a Talmud Chacham says, that's my wallet, and he had the wallet for 1 week, you believe it. Why? Because the Talmud Chacham sees things, he understands. Does every seashell look the same? No. Does every rock in the world look the same? Highly unlikely. I don't even know. Raindrops, they say two raindrops, two snowflakes don't look the same, right? Two snowflakes don't look the same. Do two rocks look exactly alike? What does it mean when Rashi says that the rock rolled over to the other rocks of Moshe and it could not see the rock? To when Klai Yisrael is telling Moshe, what are you hung up on rock A for? Just find any rock. Who cares? Klai Yisrael, in essence, is telling Moshe, who cares? You're talking to a rock that produces water. You're going to hit a rock that produces water. You know what? That whole thing makes no sense. So what's the difference? What if you choose any rock? Either way, it's insane. Either way, it's a miracle. That's the Klai Yisrael telling Moshe Rabbeinu. Who cares what rock it is? But why did Moshe Rabbeinu know what rock it was? How is it possible Moshe Rabbeinu did not see which rock it was? He spent 40 years with this rock. No idea what it was. To further this question, the rock itself. In America today, when the President of the United States becomes vice president, if he didn't milk the country blind while his 4 or 8 years of presidency, which seems to be a recurring theme of the last few presidents, what they do is, when they leave office, they charge, I'm going to pick a number, $600,000 for a speech. I don't know what the numbers are. But Dr. Mandel told me he might be giving me that for this speech tonight, but I don't think so. When I become president, I'll get $600,000 for a speech. But people, when they walk away, get a lot of money for a speech. Can you imagine? You're this rock. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This rock's the greatest rock in the history of the world. I think it's fair to say, the only rock in the history of the world that produced water when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to it, Moshe Rabbeinu hit it, to supply Klai Yisrael, 600,000 men, forget about the women, for 40 years in the desert. The best rock of all time. This is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's the first one in. He's the only one in. There's no other rock that can claim that. It's a very unique rock. Where is this rock right now? It's like, where's Waldo? Nobody knows where the rock is. Moshe Rabbeinu is where the rock. The other rocks don't know what's going on. It's an unbelievable pedal. The rock himself didn't come forward and say, by the way, Ishbindu, I'm here right now. What are you looking for me? I'm right here. Moshe Rabbeinu has no idea what this rock is. He's looking around. He doesn't know where it is. He can't even recognize it. Can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu with Tvi Yisena? Moshe Rabbeinu, probably the greatest Talmud Chacham in the history of the world, which means he had the greatest ability of Tvi Yisena. The bigger the Talmud Chacham, the better his eyesight is at seeing things. If a regular Talmud Chacham could look at a wallet that he owned for 2 days and say, that's my wallet, imagine Moshe Rabbeinu's ability to see which rock it was. He couldn't do it. That, to me, that's the biggest miracle around. What was going on with this rock? You know what's going on with this rock even more so? When the rock began producing water 40 years earlier, there was a whole different generation of Jewish people alive. All of those people alive, when the rock started producing water, I don't want to say all, 20 and 60, maybe not women, whatever it is, a large percentage of the population traveling in the desert that started on day one, that now we're up to year 40, is entirely changed. The new people here have no idea what's going on. They were born into this. They don't know what it means to see a sun, according to many, Mepharshim, the Ananya Kova closed the sun and the moon. They don't know what a sun looked like. People born in the desert never saw a sun. They never saw planting. They assume that the whole world lives by mun. The whole world has clothing that naturally grows with them. They lived in this world. Who's the greatest historian they can go over to talk to? This rock. This rock was the inside of the whole situation. He was every step of the way, had the entire history of the world. Can you imagine the speaking fees this rock can get? He can go to the Hall of Fame, get it right away, a major medal. He can walk around with the medals on his thing, right? I'm that guy. I'm that rock. And he has a first class seat. He's box seats for every major event in Klal Yisrael's history. He's there. In fact, even the newest one between the hitting and the thing, he's right there. He knows what's going on. The greatest rock in the history of the world. And guess what? No one knows. Everyone's looking around. Where's the rock? The words that Rashi uses is, the rock rolled, hence the phrase rock and roll. Rashi uses this phrase, not me. The rock rolled and went among the other rocks and was indiscernible, indistinguishable. How is it possible that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't find this rock? How is it possible that the other rocks weren't like, oh yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy to look for. Don't create a Kiddush Hashem. Don't create a Chil Hashem. It's that guy right there. The answer is that this rock was the biggest gadol, not probably among rocks, among humans, in borderline history of the world. Because any one of us that has an accomplishment, we talk about it. All my students now watching know that I talk about my football career as a 20-year-old. Years later, I'm not saying how many years, but at least five years ago, when I was a single guy in Eretz Yisrael, what? Everyone's talking about the highlights of their life. This rock, nothing. Why not? Because this rock understood something that nobody else understands. He understood what humility and jobs are supposed to be about. All of us are given talents and jobs. But when the job is up, we're not anything special. The guy who can get 100 on a report card because he has the talent and brains and gets 100 is equal to the guy who has the talent to get a 50 and gets a 50. Everyone is producing their potential to the full amount. This rock understood that in the history of the world, that's the only rock ever to produce water for 40 years in the desert. That's him. One guy. One rock. My job is up now. Miriam died. You know what I do now? I'm going to Florida on the beach. I'm not talking about it. Everyone wants to hear what he's got to say. I have nothing more to say than anybody else. I'm not special. I'm not more special than anybody else. I was given this talent. I had this talent. I walk away when I don't have this talent. That's all it is. I'm not showing off. The ability of this rock, which, by the way, the word for rock is daimon. A rock is daimon, which means it keeps quiet. It doesn't have to talk. No need to brag about its past experiences. As little kids, we all know Har Sinai was the humblest of mountains. Why? Here goes my next Irv dormitory question. I just thought of it. In Har Sinai, what happened? All the mountains were saying, there's a song, I can't sing so well. I'm the tallest, I'm the strongest mountain, I'm this mountain, I'm the widest mountain. And it might be a Uncle Moshe song. And Har Sinai says nothing, I'm the simplest of the mountains. HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't give it to me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, that's the guy I'm going to give it to. I'm going to give it to Har Sinai, the Torah will be given on Har Sinai. Why? Because Har Sinai is the humblest of the rock. Humblest of the mountains. Now, what do you think is a more impressive humility? I don't even know. This is one of these fundamental philosophical questions. What is a more impressive point of humility? Before HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides which mountain should get it, so one guy says, not me. Everyone else says, yes, me. Again, Har Sinai was the only one. So Har Sinai is major. I don't minimize it. Har Sinai is so impressive that of all the mountains of the world, Har Sinai was kept quiet. Okay, that's before anything occurred. What about afterward? This rock is afterward when he had all the accomplishments of the world. He's still not talking about it. It sounds like more impressive, no? I don't want to minimize Har Sinai's humility. But this rock had everything going for the history of the world. And he didn't say, by the way, I'm the one. That's the galus of what this rock was doing. This rock, which I would say is the greatest miracle of all time, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't even see, because the rock was keeping quiet. While the fight's going on, rocks are being switched. This guy's like, well, I didn't do anything special. Does he think I deserve it again now? Why didn't the rock say, oh, last time it was me, so obviously this time it's me? Not at all. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Well, our job is to do what our job is supposed to do. Well, the talents we are given is for us, for that moment, that time. It doesn't make us better. Rav Moshe Feinstein absolutely knew that his IQ was better than everybody else's. It's not even a question, Mary. There's no question that Moshe should realize what was going on. Every gadol in the history of the world knows their talents are more. If you would go over to Moshe Rabbeinu and you would tell Moshe Rabbeinu, were you the only person in the history of the world that took the Jews out of Egypt? Were you the only person in the history of the world that was able to bring down a Torah? If he tells you no, not honest. Yes, it's true. Rav Moshe knew he was smarter than everybody else, but he didn't think he was better than everybody else. Big difference. You have more talent than the next guy. Okay. Doesn't mean you're better than the next guy. More talent doesn't mean better. Your talent in that area was given to you for whatever purpose HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to give you that talent. Doesn't make you better than somebody else. In the world we look at, sadly to say, obviously the person who has the talent decides what he thinks is the most important talent in the world. So let's give it a random example. I vote that the greatest talent in the history of the world should be the most paid speaker of all time, should be the on the matzis, should be listened to at every point, is the guy who can talk very fast. That would be my talent. I recommend it. If you're putting in what talent should be used, yeah, in economy. The person who has a talent likes to think that his talent is the most important talent in the world. I don't know. Every talent is necessary to create a unity of what we have in the world. But that doesn't make someone better than somebody else. This rock fully understood, in the history, I'm sorry, right now, in the history of the world, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the only one in the history of the world that was able to do what it did. But yet at the same time, the job is over, Miriam died, okay, I'll join the rest of the world. What do you mean, are you saying stories? Are you in the nursing home saying, oh, in 1961, I remember? No, not going on, why? My story is as good as your story. My story is did this, your story, let me hear your story. The Rock was a dreaming. The Rock kept quiet. The Rock said, I'm silent. I don't have to brag, I don't have to show off. You know why? I have no reason to show off. I have no reason to brag. I'm no better than everybody else. My story might be cooler to you guys, but it's not that impressive. Because Baruch Hu allowed me an insane miracle to produce water. No one else. That doesn't make me better than anybody else. That means Hashem gave me a talent that nobody else had. Why? Ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I'm not better than everybody else. The world is set up that people start thinking they're better. That's the problem. I'm telling you right now. I hope I'm not minimizing Rav Moshe's greatness. If Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't realize that he was much smarter than everybody else, it would be a chazan Rav Moshe Feinstein. Of course he realized he was smarter than everybody else. It doesn't take a lot to realize that when he's learning something, everybody else is. He's 10 steps ahead within 2 seconds. He's remembering things forever, right? Rav Avad Yosef can remember things forever, right? He knew not everyone else could do that, clearly. He had recognized that he's remembering things that other people aren't. Yeah, it doesn't mean I'm better than the other guy. Yes, I know more. Okay, it doesn't make me better. The difference between being talented and being arrogant are two different worlds. You are allowed to be multi-talented, and you have a lot of responsibility when you're multi-talented. But that multi-talent doesn't make you better than somebody else. And when you treat someone that you're better, that becomes a problem, a major problem. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu here had this issue. Moshe Rabbeinu is going around, he's looking for a rock, can't find the rock. And it's bothering Moshe Rabbeinu. Shouldn't we be using the same rock? But he can't find it right away. Part of the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu set the system up not to find him right away is because for the same reason. We know where there's a phrase one of the speakers speaks about, I forgot who it was. We don't believe in streaks in Judaism. A guy said, I didn't miss Shacharis in 14 days. Okay, who cares? What's that doing anything? So I have to go be Menachem Avil somebody, but no, I can't go Menachem Avil because I don't want to miss my streak. No, your job is Menachem Avil right now. Whatever other job you might have. We don't believe in streaks because streaks represents something that means you think now you're better and that your system is better than something else's system. Not this much way. The job you have is what's in front of you at this moment in time. Who cares what happened yesterday? So the rock is sitting there saying, oh, I'm not any bit better than anybody else. Every rock here has the same ability to produce the same thing. I didn't do anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a situation where I was able to produce water for 40 years. Miriam was there. Now Miriam's not there. Anyone can be chosen. Why would I come forward and say it's me? If the rock would have came forward and said it's me, it would be Chasson in that rock. If Har Sinai would have said, I'm Har Sinai, he wouldn't have been Har Sinai. So Moshe Rabbeinu is looking for the rock, but the rock is not saying it's me. Not because he's trying to play games, Chas Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu. The rock is understanding that the moment I say it's me, I'm the wrong guy. And Moshe Rabbeinu understands this. He's like, I know why there was one rock chosen. There's one rock in the Hall of Fame. There's one rock and roll Hall of Fame. Because that rock is the one who's not coming forward. That's why I got to find that rock. It's not for anyone. The rock that can give water for 40 years in the history of Klal Yisrael. For 40 years, sustain 600,000 plus men and women and children, and then say, I'm not better than anybody else, that's the rock I want to use. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the symbol of humility, understood that I'm not better than anybody else either. Am I the one that was the only one in the history of the world that let the Jews out of Egypt? Absolutely. We said before, Moshe Rabbeinu was Netzach. Everything he touched was eternal. Eternal. That means when Klal Yisrael left Egypt, they're never going back to Egypt. When Klal Yisrael got a Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, no Jew can go off the derech, what's called literally. Once a Jew, always a Jew, because Moshe Rabbeinu made us Jews. If someone else would have made us Jews, it wouldn't have worked. Does that mean Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm better than anybody else? No. have a midah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. It's called Netzach, because of that it works. I understand that, but I also understand that that's called humility. I got to find a rock that shares my views in order to produce the water for the rest of the world. And this is the way we have to realize. I don't know how much time I did here. I'm a little lost. Sorry. Okay. So now, the Shulchan Aruch potentially could be telling us the greatest idea of all time. I don't know how many people are knowing this thing. I'm not taking a request on it at all. How many people take a rock and put it next to their pillow tonight? Shulchan Aruch says it's a minute. The Ramah agrees with the Shulchan Aruch. He said, by the way, there might be a different reason. Different reason might be greater to Yaakov Avinu. But it's possible to say that the reason we're supposed to put a rock next to our pillow is to remind us of what humility is all about. The rock symbolizing the entire destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Why? Because if Moshe Rabbeinu, again, I don't want to say made a mistake, I hate that, but if Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have been punished, that's a better phrase, wouldn't have been punished for something that occurred with this rock. What occurred? Rambam, Rabbi Nachman, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, Rashi. Everyone has a different interpretation. So whatever he did, it wasn't that easy to discern and figure it out. Everyone got a different thing. But because of a rock, a rock of humility, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Humility Rock, because of that rock, Moshe Rabbeinu did something that now he did not enter Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there was a destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. How are we going to fix that? That's our job. Our job is to mourn, or our job is to do something to get it back. If it's just mourn, I'm not minimizing just mourning. If we could do that, halavai, we could understand the mourning of the Beis Hamikdash. But let's say we're past the stage of mourning. We're past that now. What are we doing to help ourselves get a Beis Hamikdash back? If the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed for any reason we're going to give you, Sinaschinim is a good one, Kamsa by Kamsa, whatever, they weren't judging each other correctly, they weren't doing Lifnim Mishra Zadim to each other, they weren't doing any of the things they're supposed to do and how to treat their friends. How does that start? Where does it start that you don't treat someone else well? It starts when you think, Ich bin du. I'm better than that guy. When I'm better than that guy, so I'm allowed to treat him a certain way, because I'm me and he's only him. If he's only him, I get to treat him better. I get to treat him whatever I want. I'm the guy who makes that decision. Who decides how to treat that guy? I decide, because I'm better than him. So what Klai Yisrael is now supposed to do tonight is supposed to take a rock, a symbol of what represents not any rock, the rock of doimim, the rock of keep quiet. Don't brag. Don't talk. Don't think you're better, because that's what creates problems. Put the rock next to your head, right next to it, the pillow tonight. We're alive. We are sitting here as a Jewish nation, we're alive. The rocks, Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. You know why it was destroyed? Because not everyone followed the original rock. What everyone has to do is say to themselves, I don't know what happened in Parshas Chukas, sit and learn for 10 years, figure it out. All the Rishonim go through all the concepts and say, you know what? Rashi holds there's a concept called a greater miracle. Ramban doesn't agree on this. In this case, he says walking, talking and hitting a rock is the same. Maybe but Rashi holds there's such a thing called the greater miracle. But you know what the greatest miracle of that story is? The rock that disappeared. The rock that could have gone to the Hall of Fame, could have gone on a speaking tour, could have been wearing medals, could have said over the history, could have gone, and people would have wanted to hear it. You have the history. The rock said, I have nothing more to add than anybody else. I'm no different than anybody else. I'm exactly like all the other rocks. So much so that Moshe Rabbeinu, with his tfias ayin, with his ability to see, it's like the immovable mountain against the wind. Moshe Rabbeinu should be able to see everything, and he couldn't find this rock. Because that rock was more humble than Moshe Rabbeinu's Tzvias Eina. If I could say such a thing, I hope I'm allowed to say it. Moshe Rabbeinu's Tzvias Eina, the greatest Talmud Chacham in history, Tzvias Eina, was less than this rock being capable of disappearing among other rocks. Which, by the way, some of us would say, we could figure that out. I could look at 50 rocks, maybe I could say, these rocks look a little different. But the rock understood what humility is about. The rock understood what arrogance happens. When you start thinking, I was given the talents because I am. I am is the problem. So what we're supposed to do tonight is to go onto a bed, if you're going onto a bed, or on the ground, according to Shulchan Aruch, and we're supposed to think to ourselves, not just mourn over the loss of the Beis Hamikdash, we're supposed to think about what do we want to do to create that the Beis Hamikdash, the third Beis Hamikdash, will be built. As we know from the Gemara, every rabbi says it, it's the Gemara, if the Beis Hamikdash is not built in your time, we destroy it. Not that it takes more to build, it's actively being destroyed. You know why it's actively being destroyed? Because too many people don't take the lesson of the rock to heart. Too many people among Klai Yisrael, hopefully not, have what's called Sinas Chinam, or have a Kamsa Ba Kamsa. All of these stories disappear. All of them disappear the moment people understand, I am no better than you. There's a reason why it was very difficult to have a fight with Reb Moshe Feinstein. Because he had nothing to him that he argued about. He didn't care. When the person wrote a sefer against Reb Moshe Feinstein, he gave the guy an askama. When the printer called Reb Moshe and said, I don't want to put it out. He said, why not? The person needs a panasa. Of course, give it out. What's the difference? He has his opinion, I have my opinion. the idea we have to work on. Very difficult to do, because everyone has to think about what they did 20 years ago that was successful, that they're still talking about. Football, 22 years ago, whatever it was, the football win. Why? Because people are naturally, their natural position is to start talking about themselves. To think, you know what I accomplished in my life? You know what I did in my life? You did something in your life. It doesn't make you better than anybody else, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you those same koiches. He gave you the ability to do it. And the more you realize that you are not better than the next guy, you might have accomplished more. Rav Moshe knew he accomplished more, believe me. Rav Chaim Kanievsky wrote a sefer on Egel Arufa that I'm telling you, in a koil in America would sit down for 1 year together, 20 brilliant people, I don't think he'd produce it. He did it at 26 by himself. You think he didn't realize when the whole world was running around saying, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, yeah, he's not that smart. He's a masmid. Believe me, he knew reality, but he didn't think he's better than anybody else. Didn't think he's better. The point we have to work on, it's not easy, because everyone has a unique personality, everyone, and especially in today's world, when we're told that 24-hour talk radio, give us your opinion on everything. Why is your opinion worth more than anybody else's opinion? So sitting around in the earth and coming up with all these fundamental questions. Is there something called a greater miracle? Can someone be very unique? Which holiday do I want? All of these things are all good if they're done as a conversation. But the moment you think your opinion counts more, which is what America has produced, that everyone thinks their opinion counts more, what you have is the active destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, not the passive, the active destruction. So hopefully all of us will take a lesson to heart and realize that we all are great. Yeah, we're all great. We all have our talents, and if your talent is to get a 50, you get a 50, you're absolutely as great as a guy who gets 100, gets 100. Who has the talent for it? We all have a job to do, we're given talents to do, but right now, the job we should focus on is bringing back the Beis HaMikdash. Bekarov, good. I guess I should say, they told me earlier, I was involved with a project. They told me it's called the Zera Emes. I put out a Dvar Torah weekly by email. It came through an Agada of Gedolim who passed away without children. Only from Gedolim who passed away without children. There's a couple hundred of them. Each week I do somebody else. I try to do somebody else. And it's only to bring those Gedolim to be advocates for us, to be part of this world, to be their students, and hopefully they'll advocate for their own children, tell me to become students. And it's an important project that I think so, and hopefully again we'll be zeichet through Ula B'Karav.